Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation Finance and Policy Division for this Tuesday, March 3rd. And we have several bills on the agenda. We have a quorum. And on agenda item number two, Representative Petersburg, this is why we have him in this position. He found a couple of things with the minutes that need to be corrected, and so we're going to properly correct them and take up that agenda item at our next meeting. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Our first bill on the agenda is House File 3687. Representative Listelgaard, always great to see you. And I am going to move that House File 3687 be referred to the General Register. And please proceed with your bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a technical bill. It has been through the committee a couple different times, most recently last year. So this is just a technical change to U.S. Highway 53 marked over Trunk Highway 37 is what this is.
Maybe did you want to have maybe Mr. Burris or somebody explain the change here, or do you want to share with the committee?
We named this bridge after Specialist Noah Pierce, he was a veteran that lost the battle with PTSD, and this is a bill that my former colleague Jason Metza, or not my former colleague, my predecessor, brought before, and this is really to not only honor him, but also to create awareness that this is a very, very serious issue that it faces many veterans, and that's what this is for.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that forward. Is there a discussion to the bill, members? Chair Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I'm reading this is that the bridge, I think it was listed backwards, that
That's exactly right. So you have
instead of the bridge being going over the other highways going over.
Yeah,
that's what I'm reading. Okay,
that is the
minor
technical change.
Minor technical mistake.
The technical change that is before us. So, thank you for that question. Any further discussion, members? Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify in favor or in opposition to this bill? Okay. We're ready to vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, the motion prevails.
That's it? Was that the shortest one ever? Or?
It was the shortest one we've had this year.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you, Representative
Lillard.
And Vice Chair Tabke is now going to be in charge. Let's see.
All right, we now have House File 3252, Chair Hornstein's bill. Will you please move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I just wanted to let folks know that there is a fiscal note to this bill, and there is, again, some complexity to the fiscal note, and it will need revision, and I don't, as is the case, whether it's my bill or anyone else's in this committee, we don't want to send out bills with fiscal notes that are still kind of under discussion, even though it was prepared for today. So we will lay this bill over but have the hearing today, and then at a later date, possibly next week, revisit the revised fiscal note. And at that time, members, not today, but at that time, we'll move this bill over to higher education. So, again, this is just a bill that I'll move to lay it over. So we're having the hearing now, and then once we have the a clearer idea of the finances, then we'll be able to debate this bill. So, members, House File 3252 deals with issues of food security at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. And there is a nexus between the issue of access for healthy food, healthy nutritious food for students, and transportation. But just to sort of give you a little bit of background about why this is so important, and I remember reading an article in the Star Tribune in the spring of 2018. And that article quoted from a study by the Boynton Health Services at the University of Minnesota, which really, these were some startling and very concerning statistics. 17% of U of M Twin Cities students actually worry about running out of food. 10% have actually experienced shortages. So it is a staggering number, I find. And I think the reasons, and we'll have some students testifying, but students are facing the same kinds of issues that so many people are facing in our community today. They are paying high rent for housing. They have to deal with spiraling tuition costs. Many of them are working one or two jobs in addition to a full regimen of studies. And again, many of these jobs are not paying a living wage. And so then they also have transportation costs on top of all of that. And so what this bill does and what the students are asking of us is, I think, quite simple and straightforward. And that is to have better access to healthy, nutritious food that they cannot get on campus. And that would require extending the zone pass. As you know, on the Green Line, there is a free zone on the campus that currently extends from the Prospect Park station to inclusive of the East Bank station, and then that free zone ends at the West Bank station. So what this bill does is extends that zone one more station in either direction because there are healthy food options at those stations. And so, simple and straightforward, this bill came to us from the U of M students themselves. They wrote the bill with us, myself and Senator Bobby Joe Champion, who's carrying this in the Senate. Many of you know Senator Champion, a former House member. And we would very much like to pass this bill into law this year. And I know that there are some ongoing conversations with the Met Council and, of course, the University of Minnesota, which are partners with the Met Council and in the transit realm and in the zone pass. So that's the bill. I'm happy to answer questions, but we do have a number of students here that are able to testify, and I think you'll find their stories compelling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like Mr. Lee to run through the fiscal note?
You know, I think that, yes, at this point, that would be appropriate. And Mr. Lee, we've had at least an email conversation about this. And if you wanted to summarize some of the issues that you raised and in a sense, why we're holding this in committee, I think is a good decision. And if you can outline that, too, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hornstein. So in your packets, there should be a fiscal note for House File 3252. The first page is a summary of the impacts for both the Metropolitan Council and the University of Minnesota. The first page of impacts to the Metropolitan Council is on page 3, and you'll see an explanation of the the Metropolitan Council cost. So this shows the foregone revenue that the Metropolitan Council estimates by having fewer students use the UPass option and instead use the campus zone, the cost of which is split in the proposed legislation between the University of Minnesota and the Metropolitan Council. And that would be a slight change from current practice. So at the bottom of page 5, you can see some of the potential changes. This is cost to the Metropolitan Council. And then on page 7, you can see costs to the University of Minnesota. There's two pieces to the cost of the University of Minnesota. One is There'd be a slight savings to the university. You can see that in FY 2022 and 23, the about $13,000 in savings, and an explanation to that on page 9. And then there would be a one-time cost to the university of the healthy food availability study. You can see that about in the middle of page 9. So the current language has a blank appropriation on line 2.5. And so if you net out the savings to the university and the cost of the health healthy food availability study, that would be about 51,600 for the cost of the study.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lee. And Representative Hausman, you had a question. Would you like to ask that now or after testifiers?
Well, mine was just to the author. One addition to his description of the stressors on college students in terms of higher rents and higher tuition, as a result, college students have told me they're starting to advertise where the food shelves are in a college community.
Correct, and that's a very good point. Thank
Chair.
You. Mr. Chair. That's a very good point, Chair Hausman, and I think some of the students will speak to that.
Thank you very much. So we have three or four testifiers that are scheduled. You ready to do testimony now?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair? All right, so first we have Sam Parmaker. And please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Vice Chair Tabke and members of the committee. My name is Sam Parmakar. I'm the state government coordinator for the Minnesota Student Association for the undergraduate student government at the U of M Twin Cities campus that represents 35,000 undergrad students. The bill before you today is an important piece of legislation that increases transit access to students at the U by extending the light rail campus zone pass by one contiguous stop. Eagle-eyed viewers will recall that we actually had some students testify last year about this issue, and we're very pleased to be before you again today. The light rail zone pass is a transit pass provided to U students that allows us to travel between the West Bank, East Bank, and Stadium Village stations on the Green Line without paying a fare. Extending the zone pass to the Prospect Park station would help us address two problems: campus access for students living in Prospect Park and food insecurity. As you may know, food insecurity is a growing problem on campus at the University of Minnesota as well as across the state. And not enough is nearly being done to address this right now. According to MSA's 2018 Health and Wellness Report, 20% of students reported experiencing food insecurity either occasionally, often, or most of the time. Furthermore, 1 in 8 students reported utilizing the Nutritious U food pantry, which is only open 3 days a month, so it has very limited accessibility. While this is a really helpful resource that's provided, and we're grateful to have it through Boynton Health, we'd really prefer that that would be an option of last resort for students rather than something that students are routinely having to rely on at the end of the month. Grocery options on campus are extremely limited, and many students end up doing their shopping at Target Express, CVS, or Walgreens. And while these are nice to go and run and pick up a few things, I can guarantee you from experience, doing your weekly grocery shopping there is not sufficient. These options are not affordable and lack variety and freshness. Oftentimes, they're out of basic foods like milk and eggs. The closest grocery store to campus is the Fresh Time Market, which is located across the street from the Prospect Park Light Rail Station. While this bill certainly won't solve food insecurity on campus, giving students free transit access to an actual grocery store will help alleviate the problem for students who are all too often forced to rely on food pantries and convenience stores. The other issue extending the zone pass would address is the growing trend of students living in Prospect Park. The housing shortage around the U has pushed more and more students out of the traditional campus area, but these students are still just as much a part of our campus as those living in Dinkytown or Stadium Village. Campus buses don't reach out all the way to this area, but the light rail does. The nearest point of free transit access is the Stadium Village light rail stop, which is about a half mile walk from the Prospect Park station. And while I know half a mile doesn't necessarily seem like a lot, I promise you once you've made that journey, when it's 20 below zero or when you're carrying 3 bags of groceries, you'll develop a different perspective. While students can buy a U-Pass for $115 a semester, this is a significant financial imposition for those students that just want to travel between campus and Prospect Park. We're grateful that this option exists, and for many students who want to access the full Metro Transit system, it's a great choice to have. But for students who just want to take the light rail between class and home, extending the zone pass is the best option. Providing expanded transit access will make a real difference in the lives of students at the U. Even during midterms week, you can see all the students in the audience who have come to this hearing to let you know why this bill is important to them. I promise there are many, many more who wanted to be here, but were too busy. We should be investing in programs that work well for the people they serve, and the Zone Pass is certainly one of these, and I think you'll agree from the testimony you'll hear today. This is a solution being brought forward by students for a problem students are facing. I hope you'll listen to the voices of those who have lived experiences in these issues, and thank you so much for the opportunity to testify and for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Parmakar. Next up, we have Arleth Pulido Nava.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to correct myself on the record. I meant to say it was the Stadium Village stop is included in the Zone Pass. We want the Prospect Park stop included. So just to correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Pulido Nava, will you please state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Yeah. So hello, Vice President Topke and members of the committee. My name is Arleth Pulido Nava, and I am the Infrastructure Committee Director for the Minnesota Student Association. So my testimony in supporting HF 3252 is in regards to the food desert we have on campus. As Sam mentioned previously, the only really local and accessible food options that we have is Target. And although that does carry some products, it doesn't necessarily cover everybody's food restrictions and like dietary needs. So for example, I'm vegetarian, so I like need a lot of vegetables, and with the options that Target has, it's not suffice for like what I actually need, so then I have to resort to other locations, which then provides like an additional barrier to getting nutritious food. The Fresh Time in Prospect Park and Trader Joe's and U.S. Bank Stadium is the two nearest grocery stores that we have on campus, which both require either your own car or access to the light rail. And for me, I live in Dinkytown, so I don't necessarily need all of the U-Pass like that it provides. So for me, it wouldn't make sense to purchase a U-Pass, so I would have to purchase like daily tickets, which provides like an additional barrier to accessibility. And another point that we brought up was a lot of students living in the Prospect Park area. And in the campus survey in 2019, we found out that 62% of students living in Prospect Park would utilize the campus zone pass if it is extended to that area. On a daily basis, an additional 16% would use it a few times a week. So we can see that there is need, and we can see that students would actually use it. Earlier in the year, a few of my fellow student advocates and myself wrote a resolution that was presented at Forum for our student government, and it passed unanimously. So what we asked was the administration to rework its contracts with Metro Transit to either extend the campus zone pass or also create a universal U-Pass, which would provide free transportation for all students, that it didn't matter if it was within those that perimeter, it would go for everyone. And for students who have to work multiple jobs and don't necessarily have $150 a semester accessible to them, this is why I think it's really important that we support this bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have another testifier, Amelia Janik. Thank you for being here. If you could please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Yeah, hello, Vice Chair Tapke and members of the committee. My name is Amelia Janik. I am a fourth-year student studying statistics, and I currently serve as the research and data coordinator for the Minnesota Student Association. This past October, I conducted a survey on behalf of MSA. It included questions about grocery habits, off-campus living, and the campus zone pass extension. That survey received about 2,500 complete responses. One of the questions on there was specified the proposed stops that we are discussing on this bill today. And we learned from that survey that 46% of students would use the proposed extended stops either daily or a few times a week. And as mentioned earlier, of the students that indicated they were currently living in Prospect Park, about 79% of those students indicated they would use the proposed extended stops either daily or a few times a week. The proposed extension to the Zone Pass is not only beneficial for students that live in those neighborhoods that use the light rail to get to campus for class, but also for all students' accessibility to a grocery store, which is why the proposed healthy food availability study is important to us as advocates. As students, we are highly aware of the food insecurity and food desert occurring on our campus, and we do not have reliable data currently that reflects those experiences of students living on or near campus. The Healthy Food Availability Study would allow students, administrators, and elected officials to better understand the current challenges and come up with more effective solutions to combat this issue. At the Prospect Park Station, also as mentioned earlier, there is an affordable grocery store just located right as you exit the light rail. In the same survey that I mentioned earlier, there was also a question that asked where students purchase their weekly groceries most often, and it was a select all that apply question. The students that indicated that they were living in Prospect Park selected this exact grocery store as the most common resource for purchasing their groceries. So this implies that the students that do have access and live in the area are highly dependent on that grocery store, for their food. But of all respondents to that survey, the Dinkytown Target Express had the most votes for where students purchase groceries. And if any of you have ever shopped at the Dinkytown Express, it is extremely difficult. There's a very small selection, and it is more expensive than other accessible stores we have indicated. This is why I'm here to represent the student voice and advocate for the passing of this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Janik. And last testifier we have on the schedule is Mr. Judge Shetnin from Met Council. Mr. Shetnin.
Mr. Chair and members, not very often I break out my glasses here, but it's been a long week already. But anyway, for the record, my name is Judd Shetnin. I'm the Government Affairs Director at the Met Council, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak on this bill. And while the council does support expanding transit options for students at the University of Minnesota, we do not support how it is proposed in House File 3252. And I just have to add that I have a son at the University of Minnesota, and I'm a huge University of Minnesota supporter, but there are some real issues with this bill that we'd just like to take a moment to point out. What happens is that this bill sets a new precedent by having Metro Transit absorb costs in order to provide free rides for certain users of our system. We feel this is inequitable and a very slippery slope. Since 2014, the university has paid the council in negotiated amounts for the campus zone free service for students and faculty to use the green line between the West Bank, East Bank, and Stadium Village stations. By extending the zone to an additional station and having the council absorb half of those costs, it is giving the students and faculty at the university a benefit that no other user on our entire system enjoys. There are no free rides. As folks will recall, we have free rides that are provided on St. Patrick's Day, on New Year's Eve, and other types of promotions that go on. All of those free rides are underwritten, similar to the free rides that are being provided on the campus zone. I'd like you to keep in mind that we have relationships with over 30 colleges, universities, and institutions of higher learning on our system. How are we supposed to tell them that the University of Minnesota students and faculty deserve a better deal than they do? A simple solution to this request would be for the bill to instruct the university to pay for the additional stop that is being requested for the campus zone service. However, we feel that we have a better solution than that. We have been meeting with the university since last summer to look at alternatives to increase transit accessibility and affordability. Our idea would be to dramatically reduce the U-Pass, which is the universal pass that was mentioned earlier, from $115 per semester to $52 per semester. That means that in 15 days, a $2 light rail ride from Prospect Park to the West Bank or from the West Bank back to Prospect Park would be paid off in 15 days or 3 weeks into the semester. We are currently partnering with Augsburg University on a similar pilot now, and we've seen an amazing 60% growth in the Universal Pass participation. If we were able to implement a similar pass at the University of Minnesota, we would expect similar growth. This program would allow students unlimited access to the entire transit system and not just the four stops that this bill proposes. It would also further benefit the students who do not live on or near campus. My son is a sophomore and he does not live on campus. And I know that there are a number of students who don't live between those three stops or Prospect Park. And lastly, in order to be equitable, this pilot if this pilot continues to be as successful as it seems, we will be able to provide the same dramatic discount on our Universal Pass to all 30 colleges and universities that we partner with today. So I would just like to mention that one of the biggest issues that we have with this bill is having Metro Transit have to absorb the cost for extending that Prospect Park stop. It is unfair, and it is setting a really bad precedent for us and how we work with the other universities and colleges in our system. I understand the concerns that are being raised by the Student Association, but I would encourage them to work with us and work with the university to try to implement something that will help all college and university students, because we reach out to folks all across the regions who use our college pass. And so with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I have folks here from Metro Transit as well that can speak to how we were able to come up with these costs. But if you have any specific questions for me, I'd be happy to take them.
Thank you, Mr. Shetnin. Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question to the equity issue. So you currently provide free rides on those three connections that they have to make on campus in Minneapolis. Those who are required to take the dedicated busway between the Minneapolis and St. Paul campus, is that free?
Mr. Shetnin. Chair and Representative Hausman, the free rides that I'm talking about aren't free. The university actually pays for the students to be able to ride for free between the West Bank, East Bank, and Stadium Village. What this bill is doing is asking to have that extended and have Metro Transit pay for half of that out of our budget. The university could easily be solved by having the university pay for that fourth stop like they do the other three. I know that the university also has their own system that shuttles folks back and forth between the campuses. That's an answer that would have to come from the university.
Representative Hausman.
And so my question about equity has to do with on behalf of the St. Paul campus, which
yes.
is what I represent. So then I would have to check with the university whether students that are connected on the Minneapolis campus, the university would pay for free rides. So the question is, do they pay for free rides between the Minneapolis and St. Paul campus on the dedicated busway? I may have to get that.
Great.
Conversation.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I think it's great too that the university should answer that. But I raised the point about we've got Hamline University on the A line, we've got McAllister University on the A line, we've got St. Thomas University that is runs on our service right along Creighton Avenue, and so what we're trying to figure out is how do we say that the University of Minnesota shouldn't have to pay for that service while with the college passes that we have with all of these other universities, the Minneapolis Technical College, similarly, that we think that there is a better approach to doing this by dramatically reducing that Universal Pass by almost 70%, which is enormous. And so this is not to discount the comments that are being made by the students at the university. I think that their heart is in the right place, and I agree with the fact that they have concerns about these issues, but having Metro Council and Metro Transit pay for that reduced or for that extension is not anything that we will support.
Representative Mason.
Thank you. I just need to get clarification on the cost. As I understand it, right now, the colleges are picking up the cost of the pass. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair and Mr. Shetnin.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, to be clear, the campus zone pass, which has also been known as the free zone, that is underwritten by the university to allow their faculty and students to ride free, but it is paid for by the university. It is not provided free from Metro Transit.
Representative Mason.
Follow-up question then. So when you're talking about decreasing the cost of the passes, it's actually the educational institution that is paying for that difference in cost then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, that is exactly right. And one of the reasons why we're able to offer that as a pilot program through Augsburg University is because we felt that there was a demand out there for that service at a reduced cost. And what we've seen is that we've had a 60% increase in use of our Universal Pass at Augsburg, and we would expect the same thing to happen with the University of Minnesota. And regardless of all of this, we still think it's a bad idea to have Metro Transit subsidize free service for any university and not have an equitable approach to all other college and universities.
Okay. And again, to clarify,
Representative Mason.
So while they're picking up the difference in cost because more people are buying the passes, they should come out fairly even?
Mr. Chair and Representative Mason, yes, we believe that we will not see the cost to our system if we reduce those passes, because we will see that offset with the increased purchase of the U-Card pass.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to get sort of a visual here. So just could somebody clarify the distance from Stadium Village, which I take it is the last stop, to Fresh Time? Does somebody have that exact distance?
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, I believe it is about a mile. It's about a mile. It's from the stadium, kind of the area where the Witch's Tower is. There's a station right there. It's about a mile further east from the Stadium Village station, right where the TCF Stadium is.
Okay. Representative Runbeck.
Okay. I mean, is there a question of safety in walking to that mile, to the Fresh Time? I'm just, you know, maybe there's safety, but I just have a question: why this is a state problem? I really don't understand that the state has to solve this problem, and is being asked to by students who we expect are going to school to, you know, become independent and problem solvers themselves. You know, I could offer a lot of options. I won't, but. There's a cost issue, granted, but I think there's something else, and I really am not appreciative. I don't agree with this. You know, there's bicycling, friends with cars, going home for the weekend. I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting to hear from the folks that did testify. How often do you get home? Is that a transportation issue as well? But I mean, it's these are issues that individuals have to solve, and I don't think it's a state issue. Thank you.
Representative Runt, did you want to ask?
I asked about the mile, you know.
Yep. Okay, so you're good from there? All right. Representative Chris. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll just mention is for folks who aren't familiar with the Prospect Park area, another folks that people may be familiar with is the Surly Brewery is right around that area as well. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, did you want to comment at all, or are you?
Well, I mean, if we're done, I don't know. If
well, we still have a couple questions.
Yeah.
Then. I okay. just didn't
yeah,
know.
I mean, I'll wrap up. I know Mr. Parmaker may want to make some closing comments.
Perfect. All right, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just want to revisit some of the questions that Representative Mason brought forward. Mr. Shetland, you had talked about a way to solve the problem. I may have my numbers a little off on it, but I do want to just explore this a little bit. You said a way to do that would be to take the $115 pass and do it at 52 or something like that. My question is, if you're displacing revenue from one source into another source within the transportation system, does that short some of your other operations by discounting in one area, even though you're making it up in volume as you're anticipating to do? How would those additional revenues be allocated back to cover shortfalls in the light rail system? And I may have my numbers off just a little bit, but I think you get the gist of what I'm looking at. Mr. Shetland.
And Mr. Shetland, but just to be clear, that is not the bill that's in front of us today. And the bill that's in front of us today is Chair Hornstein's proposal. Not Mr. Shetland's pilot project for that they're doing at Augsburg. So would you like to continue with that line of questioning, or Representative O'Driscoll?
Yes, it's, Mr. Chair, since it was raised as a solution to the problem that's before us, I think it's worth exploring to help members make a decision as to which direction they might want to go with their vote on this bill and how it might proceed going forward. I'm just simply asking a question. I'm following up on the inquiry that Representative Mason had, so I don't see it out of bounds. It's just asking additional questions about the revenue source, so I don't know that it's an out-of-bounds question for this bill.
I didn't say it was out of bounds. I'm just saying, making sure that everyone's clear that that's not what the bill is advocating for. So, Mr. Shetnin.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I appreciate the question. I actually proposed two solutions. I think the easiest solution would be to have the university just negotiate that fourth stop like they have the previous three stops. I have real concern with the fact that Metro Transit is being asked to absorb half of those costs. And I think that that is setting a very bad precedent for all of our other relationships with other colleges and universities. So, but that is a solution that could be remedied that way. Regarding the reduction of the UPass and reducing it from $115 down to $52 for the semester is a pilot that we are working on, right, or that we have with Augsburg University right now. What we are seeing is with that growth, that 60% increase in use, that it is offsetting what we would otherwise have seen in revenue from a smaller amount of students using the Universal Pass, but at a higher cost. I don't, and so we're looking at that. We will be looking at what those numbers look like when the pilot is over. However, I can't go into the detail. I don't think that we're seeing this necessarily as a moneymaker. We don't want to lose funds off it. We do want to make sure that there's accessibility and affordability for students to get throughout the region. We also think by making it more affordable, it gets folks comfortable with the transit system who may become lifelong users of the transit system, so we see the benefit of that as well. But I think if we were to see this as being a way that we were going to lose money, we would have concerns about having that pilot continue. But I know that's a roundabout answer, but I don't have all of the financing fleshed out at this point. But I will commit to you that we have our finance staff who work on these relationships who'd be happy to continue that and explain how we come up with finding the sweet spot in order to do these discounts. But I do believe that a 70% discount and a universal pass that will allow you to go anywhere in our entire system, not just the four stops at the university, would be much more attractive to many, many, many students.
Like all the way to Shakopee.
All the way to Shakopee. Yeah. And we could provide it to, if it works right, we can provide it to all colleges and universities throughout the region.
Representative Driscoll, did you have any follow-up on that? Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank the students who came down here. I think you are displaying a lot of independence and problem-solving skills by looking at this and trying to figure out a solution for everybody that is in your community, and also about trying to figure out how to make the best healthy choices as far as your diet. And so I just want to thank you guys. I don't think I would have done something like this when I was in college, so thanks.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Mr. Chair, how would you like to proceed?
Sure. You want to? Okay. I think Mr. Parmer will make some very brief closing comments, and I will, and then we're laying the bill over. So.
All right, Mr. Parmakar, please proceed.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will try and be as brief as possible. Just to respond to a few of the issues that have been raised. So as far as the proposal for a universal pass goes, as we've communicated to the Met Council and to the university previously, we actually are really interested in seeing that proposal developed, and ultimately we think that that could be the end solution to this issue. Now, the problem with that as a substitution for this proposal is that the development of the proposal of the Universal Pass is something that's going to take a number of years. And so actually just last week, there was a task force that formed and met for the first time that includes administrators and students, and they're actually studying future transit solutions for students. And I think the number that they gave is the earliest we could possibly have a Universal Pass is 2022, 2023. Which is great, and we certainly want to work towards getting that proposal, but food insecurity is a problem that's happening right now. And so I don't think we should be asking students, well, let's just wait a few years and we'll come back and solve it, because frankly, that's something we've heard far too many times on a number of different issues. And then the other thing with that is, ultimately, the Universal Pass would be funded by a mandatory increase to student service fees for all students. And while it could, in the long run, potentially be beneficial, anytime we talk about increasing fees for students, we want to have students consent to do that. So before our organization gives a go-ahead to a Universal Pass, we would want to put that proposal to students in an all-campus referendum so that we know that we have the support of the student body to do so. So we certainly look forward to seeing that proposal developed, and in a few years, if that's ready to go, and that's the direction that students choose to move, I think that would be a great thing. But in the interim, we're asking for the zone pass to be extended. And then Representative Runback, just to respond to the points that you made, why is this a state issue, and why is this something students should just be solving individually? And I guess to that I would say, this isn't like an individual problem that individual students are experiencing, but rather it's a structural problem. We know that our campus is a food desert and that those healthy food options simply don't exist in the vicinity. And while, you know, maybe if a student needed to go to a grocery store once every 2 weeks or something, they could maybe get a ride for a friend. Would not be able to bicycle while trying to balance grocery bags. But what we're really seeing is this is a problem that many students are experiencing every single day, especially the students that live in Prospect Park, because they have to go to and from campus every day. And so we really think that because we can't rely on each individual student to be finding a solution to that problem, that it really is the role of our governing institutions to be helping us solve that problem. And we've talked to the Met Council, we've talked to administrators, and the path we did choose to go to was through the state legislature, because we felt that this was the best path forward in order to have action taken on the issue. So I do think that the state has a role to play here, and I think that food insecurity certainly is not something that is unique to our campus at the U of M, but rather all college campuses around the state and even off college campuses. And I think that healthy food availability study will help shed some light on the more specific aspects of that problem and help us moving forward identify more effective solutions that the state, the city, other entities can take to addressing those problems.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Marker. And Mr. Chair, we had a quick last question or comment from Representative Mason, if we can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hornstein, the study that was just alluded to, it seems to me that the reason the students are here is because they know there's a food desert. So is the fact that, is the study really necessary?
Mr. Chairman. And Representative Mason, yes, because you know, this is the transportation pieces of this is just a symptom of a broader problem. So, you know, there's a lot of I think to have a professionally done quantitative study evaluating, you know, what are the options, what are some of the needs. How do you solve this? I mean, would it be farmers markets that are, you know, maybe longer in duration than what currently exists? I mean, there's a lot of issues related to food policy that could be examined. And I think that Section 3, I don't think we had last year. And I think it's really important because that gets at the broader issue here. And that's why one of the reasons it's going to the Higher Ed Committee. Just in conclusion, Mr. Chair, if there's not any other questions, we are laying this bill over. I'm very committed to working with the Met Council, the students, the U of M, as is Senator Champion, to resolve this. I think that, again, I would echo what Representative Cagle said. This was an incredible presentation from students, and I think that they articulated very clearly with data and with passion why this is so important to them. And so I'm committed to seeing this through so that we can actually solve and address this problem. And I would also just say in conclusion, and I understand what Mr. Shetland was saying as well, but it's kind of an apples to oranges comparison. We were talking about one light rail line and one and possibly in two stops, additional stops. That's it. You know, whether this sets this precedent, I mean, you know, I'm not sure of that, but this is really specific to one mode and one line and just a sort of a minimum of additional mileage here. So it's a very, very contained proposal for the largest concentration of college students in the state.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And with that, we will lay this bill over and move on to our next bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members.
The next bill that will be up just for everyone while we're resituating again is House File 3072, Representative Moran's bill. Got this.
All right. Representative Moran, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
This is House File 3072, and I am going to move that House File 3072 be referred to the General Register. Please tell us about your bill.
All right. Well, thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. It's my pleasure to introduce my bill, House File 3072. This bill is an opportunity to take a common sense step to protect the health of the most vulnerable people among us, our kids. Specifically, my proposal would protect children from being exposed to dangerous secondhand smoke and e-cigarettes aerosol while riding in a vehicle. So I'm going to just kind of like quickly walk you through the bill. In Section 1, it clarifies that smoking is not allowed in public transportation vehicles being used for personal use when a child is present. Sections 2 and 3 ensures that new prohibition is referenced in the Minnesota Clean Indoor Air Act. Section 4 is important. First, we define smoking, which is the same definition of smoking we use in the Clear Indoor Air Law. It includes smoking cigarettes, cigars, e-cigarettes, and other tobacco products. Marijuana, or any other plant. This means children in vehicles will enjoy the same clear indoor air protections that we are all enjoying in bars and restaurants across the state. This section also includes the language prohibiting smoke in vehicles when a child under 18 is present and outlines associated penalties. It's very important to note a few things here. First, the new law will only apply when a child is in the vehicle because the violation would not be a primary offense. Drivers could not be pulled over for smoking without violating another traffic law. We won't be asking police to chase down smokers. However, if a driver were stopped for speeding or some other violation, the officer could also ticket them for smoking. Again, only if a child is present. Now, the point of this law is not to punish smokers. Rather, it is to protect children, to raise awareness of the impact smoking has on those around you, and to make it easier for people to make a healthy choice. Just like the state smoking ban, we expect this to have a positive ripple effect. When that law passed, we saw more smokers try to quit. We saw more Minnesotans, including smokers, make their home smoke free. And the smoking bans motivated people to take stock of the smokiness of their own living spaces. Many realized their smoking affect not just themselves, but also their loved ones, like their children. Here's a little statistic for you. Nearly 23% of Minnesota children roll in a smoking vehicle at least once in the past week. Those are the children who are counting on us to do this. 9 other states have passed similar legislation, including some states not especially known for their health policies. We have seen in those states that this is a largely self-enforcing policy. I am confident of a smooth implementation here in Minnesota. I want to thank you for your consideration and encourage you to vote yes on this bill. I also have a testifier here to speak to this bill.
Thank you very much. Please state your name for the committee and welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Latricia Vital. I am the Director of Health Policy and Advocacy at North Point Health and Wellness Center in North Minneapolis, and I also serve as a Minneapolis Park Commissioner. I'm representing Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation, a coalition of 60-plus organizations protecting youth from tobacco addiction. I also co-chair the Menthol Coalition. We are a group of advocates fighting the specific problem of menthol, especially in the black community. We very much support Representative Moran's proposal on kids in cars. We know the public also supports it. In the last few weeks, Minnesota residents were polled and asked if they support keeping smoking and vaping out of cars with kids. The poll found out that 88% support taking this common sense step to keep kids safe. Because it's really just common sense, secondhand cigarette smoke is deadly, and e-cigarette aerosol has known and unknown risk. No child should be forced to breathe either of them in. The 2007 smoking ban was a great step. So was taking vaping out of public spaces last year. But there's still one final gap, and that's cars. Now, I don't know anyone who would say, oh, yeah, it's dangerous to expose kids to these chemicals in other places, but if it's in the car, it's just fine. This is just obvious nonsense. Listen to this. In 2014, the Center of Energy and Environment did a research project on air quality inside cars containing secondhand smoke. They tested the air inside a car when the driver is smoking. They tested different speeds, car ventilation and fans, and opening the windows. Now, I'm no scientist, but one thing that jumped out to me when I read this was that air quality is measured on a 500-point scale. Zero is good and 500 is hazardous. You with me so far? Everybody with me? So when the researchers measured the particles in the smoky car under these conditions, they found the average concentration was 2013. That's 2013 on a 500-point scale. I just don't know what to say about that. I mean, that just seems crazy, right? Like, just that number is so high. And the smoke stays in the car even after the cigarette gets put out. The combined total for exposure when a person is in the car for 30 minutes during and after somebody has a cigarette was 12,250. Again, that's on a 500-point scale. That means if a kid is in a car for a half an hour with a person who has one cigarette, it's as if they sat in a smoke-filled room for 3 hours. And long story short, no opening the window doesn't get rid of smoke either. In closing, I hope you will support this bill and a number of other proposals under consideration that helps put barriers between kids and tobacco products. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I'm going to call you Commissioner.
Thank you.
You represent me in Minneapolis. I wanted to also note for the committee, in your packets, there are letters of support from the following organizations: Clearway Minnesota, Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota, the Twin Cities Medical Society, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Minnesota chapter. As Ms. Vital said, Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation, and the American Lung Association have all come out in support of this legislation. So now we'll take some member questions. To Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moran, I'm with you. I don't like smoking. I've had a couple kids that smoked and quit smoking, which I'm very grateful for. It's just not a good habit. It has a lot of dangers, and I really support that. My concern is the enforcement of this, because, as you said, it doesn't eliminate people from smoking when there isn't children in the car. But we just heard that even a half hour after somebody has smoked in the car, there has been issues with air quality. And parents who smoke in the car with their kids are more likely to also smoke in the house with their kids there as well. And according to 2.25 through 2.28, the police officer authority to stop or search, it says the police officer may issue a citation for violation of this section. But how do they know it's violated if there isn't a smoking, if there isn't a cigarette being smoked? Because the police officer pulls lights on, the guy takes his ashtray and puts the thing out, there's still smoke in there. They don't know if he just picked up the child or not. And so my question is if we don't have something that's enforceable, it makes it very difficult for us to solve the issue. So is there something that I've missed that I just don't read here?
Chairwoman Moran or Commissioner Vita, either one of you want to answer that?
So Chair Hornstein, Representative Pearson. So first, just like one, this bill is not, the primary part of this bill is for self-regulation. It's not to like punish the smoker or someone who's driving, but as I stated in my presentation, if someone was speeding or for some other reasons, right, that they were stopped, and it was a smoke-filled car, that would be a reason, and there was a child in the car, that could be a purpose for a ticket. Or for, you know, the first is a warning, right? And we try to do our best to minimize to be the process of being punitive. So the second warning is a $50 ticket. But the goal is to help us self-regulate ourselves. So much like, you know, if we could just think back and reflect on when we start having this conversation around a Clean Indoor Act, where it was a commonplace for us to go into a restaurant and smoke. We even decided that we would have parts of the restaurant that was smoking, that would be allow people to smoke in the other part of the restaurant where we said, you know, was not a non-smoking area. The fact is we knew the smoking was lingering in the space. So if you go into a restaurant right now today, I think any of us would look around and say, you know, wait a minute. If someone was smoking, we would have this kind of impact about, wait a minute, what is going on here? This is imposing on my well-being. So we're just saying, take the same consideration for children who would be in a car. Right, and try to stop the behavior of people of smoking in the car.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Moran. You know, I agree with you. I mean, 100%. I could tell you that just the other day, I got in a elevator with this real strong smell of smoke, and I don't believe anybody was smoking in there. But heavy smokers have so much of that in their clothing that it just wafts around them and stays in the air. And so a highway officer that stops somebody for speeding and smells that smoke coming from a car may think he has the authority to issue this particular citation when in reality they may have exactly followed this law. And so that's only my concern is how we tighten it up so that law enforcement can have justifiable grounds that will stand up in court to say that they actually did smoke while I was in the car, and that's the challenge here. For me, I would just caution all parents to take in consideration of their child's health, whether it's in a car or in their house or not, because they're creating a danger for their child, and something to me would always take precedence over that. But I've never had that addiction, so I don't know how difficult it is to resolve. But that's the concern I have, is that I'm not sure that this is enforceable this way. But let's keep working on it, because I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative O'Driscoll, and then we'll have Representative Elkins after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And mine are more probably technical for Mr. Lee or Mr. Burgess. The first question that I have is, how would this bill before us, if it became law, be applied if we had the operator of the vehicle who was 17? They were the only individual in that vehicle, but yet they were also participating in smoking. Would a ticket be issued to that individual because there's someone in the vehicle under the age of 18 who is also the perpetrator? How would the statute anticipate that?
Yes, I'm calling a friend, so we have a.
There's a familiar face. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Jeannie Weigum. I'm a volunteer with the Association for Non-Smokers Minnesota. And to
did
the
you
issue.
Hear Representative O'Driscoll's question?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I just asked for House interpretation of that. I mean, you're the chair. You can go to whoever you'd like, but I would like to eventually hear from House
okay,
on
well,
this.
Well, why don't we have Mr. Burris first, and then if the testifier wanted to comment. Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, my reading is that the driver would be subject to the requirements. You can see on page 2.18, the prohibition is the no person. may smoke in a passenger vehicle. So I would take that to likely include the driver of the vehicle as well as any passengers. And so that person would be subject to the warning and citation provisions as I read it.
Ms. Wyrum, did you? Oh, Representative O'Driscoll, did you want to follow up?
If I could, Mr. Chair. Mr. Burgess, another question for you. So let's assume that the primary violation was excessive speed. The vehicle is being pulled over, and there are four individuals in the vehicle. And there's a question as to whether or not the ages of the three people who are the non-operators of that vehicle are age 18 or older. Would an officer under this law be asking them for a form of identification to verify whether they were or were not of that age? And I'm thinking of people who might be juniors or seniors in school, high school, who are friends, 17-year-old juniors, 18-year-old seniors, who are, you might have a mix of people in the vehicle. How would the law enforcement officer, what kind of tools would they have to be able to enforce this?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, I would defer to law enforcement officers or agencies to get into the details on that. I'm just not familiar with what their practices are on motor vehicle stops when they're, you know, potentially minors with, you know, this kind of proposal or with other motor vehicle stops under current law.
Mr. Chair, just one other follow-up question.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I suspect that Mr. Burgess is going to have probably the same answer to this. If they weren't able to produce an identification, would there be a point in time where they could produce that they were of legal age or over the age of 18, so that the driver may not be issued a citation for this violation?
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, one thing I could comment on is the general process for citations that are issued, whether it's for a petty misdemeanor or a higher offense level. There's still an opportunity to go to court, and that would be, you know, one step where somebody could provide documentation at the time of a court hearing to demonstrate their age.
Representative Driscoll, did you want to follow up? Okay. We have Representative Elkins, and maybe Ms. Ryan, you're up there. I don't know if you wanted to testify or just be a resource.
I think I was asked to be present to address Mr. Petersburg's question.
Okay. Sounds like are you satisfied with what you've heard? Or?
Well, I don't know if there was.
Representative Petersburg.
Mr. Chair, I certainly don't know what the answer is, so if there is additional information, I'd be certainly interested in hearing it.
Okay. Let's do this. Ms. Ryan, if you could very briefly respond to Representative Petersburg's question, then we're going to move on to Representatives Elkins and Joachim and move on towards moving this bill along, because we have another bill after this.
Thank you.
Ms. Ryan, briefly.
Chair Hornstein, this is very simple. If somebody is actively smoking a cigarette at the time they are stopped for another offense, the officer can either issue a warning if it's a first offense, or if it's a second offense, then it would be the ticket. So this is not where they're going to use a smoke detector and discover if there's any residue in the vehicle. This is an issue of, is the person actively smoking? Does that provide 1,000% protection to that child? No. This is a bill that provides tremendous protection to most children most of the time.
Thank you. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an issue that's very personal for me. We all have these little hot button issues like this. But when I was growing up, my father was a chain smoker, and we had a very small subcompact car growing up, and he would chain smoke in the car one after the other, while my brother and sister and I all suffered in the back seat. He ultimately lost half of his lung to lung cancer and died of heart failure, but the rest of us are still kind of feel like we're living with this sort of Damocles over our heads, just because we were exposed to his smoking in the car for so many years. So I'm definitely supporting what you're trying to do here.
Thank you for sharing that story. Representative Joachim, and then we do have actually one additional testifier from the audience. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Moran, no question either. I just wanted to show support for the bill. No, having it be a secondary offense, I think you did a really good job at kind of threading that needle to make sure that we're not punishing smokers, but also making folks aware. A lot of the times you do bills like this to make sure that that education piece is out there as well, and hopefully that will lend itself to folks realizing that it's just not a great idea to smoke around your kids because of the secondhand smoke. So thank you.
Thank you. So we have a Ms. Heidi Meyer who would like to testify. Is there anyone else in addition to Ms. Meyer that would like to testify either in favor or in opposition to the bill? Okay. Ms. Meyer will be our last public testifier. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Heidi Meyer. Meyer spelled M-Y-H-R-E. So you have it correctly for the record.
Thank you.
I support this bill. I saw it on actually on the YouTube website, and I really think it's a great bill, but I'm thinking of furthering it just not just children, but I'm thinking people with disabilities who have to be in the car with the, because each individual mostly gets some driver, you know, from a company that helps them with their disability. So I thought, well, it's hard sometimes to get a non-smoker. You're lucky you even get a PCA or a person who can help you with your type of disability. And if they can be a non-smoker, that would be awesome, or not smoke in the car, because I don't want to get out of the car smelling like a chimney. And I'm also thinking of the children who have to rely on people who take them to schools or take them to their doctor's appointments where mom and dad have to work and they were with their disabilities. So we can do so much with this bill, and it's not just what she's talking about, but we can further it through human services. We can further it in other areas. You can be really creative once you figure out the how you're going to force it and make it work, you know. So that's just what I wanted to say. So I really appreciate this bill was brought into the table, and I'm glad it was filmed, and I got to see it, and I got to hear what her points of views were. And I've worked with this lady before, so I know she had the passion of making a difference. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Representative Moran, did you want to offer any final concluding thoughts before we take a vote?
So, real quickly, I just say that this bill is really is an opportunity to take a common sense step to protect the health and of the most vulnerable people around us, which is our children. So please support the bill.
Thank you very much. Members, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 3072 be referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're on your way to the General Register. Appreciate your testimony and Commissioner Vita and all of the others who wrote letters. We have one more bill, members, on the agenda, and that is House File 3240. And Representative Tabke, I think we are moving this to the General Register. You want to move it? 3240.
We got a better today.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Do you mind sharing the joke with the rest of the class? No, I'm joking.
It's just Representative O'Driscoll.
Representative Tabke.
I'd like to make a motion to refer House File 3240 to the General Register, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Welcome, and please proceed with your bill.
Thank you very much, sir. So this is a bill that comes from MnDOT, and MnDOT has long been responsible for administration and oversight of Special Transportation Services Program, which provides transportation to the elderly and disabled. And this work is done through issuing operating authority to providers and conducting vehicle inspections and records audits. If House File 3240 does a couple of different things, and it adds clarity and creates efficiencies to work the department is already doing, it makes some technical changes to modify language that was enacted during the 2015 and 2016 sessions, and it repeals a provision that is obsolete. And Mr. Chair, I have Ms. Laura Rhodes here from MnDOT to further explain details on the bill.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Rhodes. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. For the record, Laura Rhodes from MnDOT's Office of Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and thank you to Representative Tabke for carrying this proposal. As Representative Tabke stated, MnDOT is responsible for certain regulatory aspects of this program, such as licensing, inspections, and audits. And I do want to clarify that MnDOT does not have a role with respect to determining rates for or providing reimbursement to companies for transportation services. That is a function of the Department of Human Services and managed care organizations. And though our two agencies have separate roles, MnDOT worked very closely with DHS when the changes were made several years ago in an attempt to make sure that the oversight across the two agencies would not conflict and is consistent where applicable. Now, I'd like to briefly walk through the language in House File 3240. In Section 1 on line 2.3, we are proposing to add trip records limited to date, time, and driver's name to the list of records that providers are required to maintain. As we conduct records audits and/or investigate complaints, having this additional information will add efficiency and expediency to our work in helping to ensure that transportation is provided by vehicles that have been inspected and drivers that are qualified. Before moving on to sections 2 and 3, I'd like to provide a little bit of history regarding the changes from 2015 and 2016, which will provide some context for the remaining sections. The definition of special transportation services was amended to include non-emergency medical transportation services, which had the effect of making this subset of providers subject to MnDOT's oversight. Previously, regulation of non-emergency medical transportation providers had been done at the local level. A requirement was added that company owners and controlling individuals, as well as certain types of employees, are subject to a background study done through the Department of Human Services. And lastly, a fee for vehicle decals was added. So in Section 2, the existing language on lines 2.5 to 2.7 gives the commissioner the ability to choose not to issue operating authority to a company if an owner or controlling individual is disqualified per the DHS background study. The new language on lines 2.7 and 2.8 would allow MnDOT to choose to not issue operating authority if a company owner or controlling individual has not conducted a background study to determine whether the individuals are required are qualified as required by law. In Section 3, language is being added for a similar purpose as in Section 2. Under existing law on lines 2.21 to 2.28, the commissioner is required to notify a provider if an employee is disqualified and direct the provider to no longer use the individual to provide services for the company. The new language on lines 2.22 and 2.23 require us to do the same if an employee has not conducted a background study to determine whether the individuals are qualified as required by law. On lines 3.3 to 3.9, language is being added to require the department to send written notice to a provider who has failed to pay for their decals and gives the commissioner authority to suspend a provider's operating authority if the provider fails to pay after receiving written notice and being given an additional 60 days to submit payment. It also establishes appeal rights to a provider if its authority is suspended for this reason. Lastly, Section 4 is repealing language that was put in place specifically in an attempt to determine how many non-emergency medical transportation providers would be coming under MnDOT's authority. It is not a process we currently use and have not needed to use it since the provisions became effective in July 2016. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Rhodes. Questions of the committee for either the author or for MnDOT? Okay. Any closing comments, Mr. Vice Chair?
No, Ms. Chair. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for bringing the bill forward. So is there anyone in the audience that wants to testify either in support or in opposition? Okay. Representative Tabke, would you like to renew your motion that House File 3240 be referred to the General Register?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay, the motion is before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. You're on your way to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, we before we adjourn, just a little announcement about Thursday. We have three bills. It's sort of a The transportation hits just keep on coming. We've got Highway 14, we've got Real ID, and school speed zones. So just wanted to give you a preview for Thursday. And there's no further business before the committee, so we stand adjourned. Oh, Representative Torkelson.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, just a mechanics question. Yeah. Are you planning on producing a committee bill that we would assemble some of these issues into a single bill, or
that's a great question. At this point, you know, we're trying to just send these bills out individually, and we'll see what happens. You know, when they get, we're gonna, I think, get a target sometime in the third week of March, is my understanding, and you know, depending on that. You know, we might be able to assemble something, and some of it, of course, depends on how the Senate wants to handle this. But at this point, we're just passing the bills individually, and you know, see where they go.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll take the nugget of good news out of there that we are getting a target.
Representative Torkelson, I would emphasize the word nugget. So, but at this point, we're just going to continue to process individual bills. Any other questions? Business? We stand adjourned.